How about the women's soccer coaching staff being named by the United Soccer Coaches as the staff of the year in the South region? Delbert, of course, actually joined, and this is something he talked about with Jim on the show, the radio broadcast on Bulls Unlimited 2 seasons ago, and this last year moved over to ESPN Plus. So he's worked with Denise Shelty Brown. They're friends, and we feel like we're friends with her as well. It's the staff, Chris Brown, the associate head coach, along with Yvonne Lopez. And let me tell you, Yvonne, this is something cool. We've always talked about it. Whenever I'm doing a broadcast, I probably shouldn't be surprised to see it by now, but women's soccer is a great example because I see them at the softball games. I see men's soccer at the volleyball matches. When I went to Gainesville for the tennis match a couple of weekends ago, the first round match for Ashley Fisher's team, Yvonne Lopez was there supporting the Bulls. That's not exactly right around the corner, by the way. But anyway, he's great, and so is the staff and those that voted on this around the country, specifically in the South region, agreed that they are the region staff of the year. In fact, this was the same honor bestowed upon Denise Shelty Brown and company in 2019. So back to back, as it were. If you want the entire coaching staff situation, UnitedSoccerCoaches.org. I did try and figure out exactly which conferences comprise each region. Because, for example, the Southeast Staff of the Year, this turned out to be right because Marshall won the championship last night. I'll play that highlight. I usually don't do a lot of Marshall soccer highlights, but you have to see it. And when you hear the goal, you'll want to actually go search it out. But either way, they were the Southeast Staff of the Year. And I only bring that up because UCF was considered in the East for the men's side of things. Now, for the women's side of things, USF is in the South. Anyway, it's still a big-time honor. And oh yeah, the soccer season did wrap up last night. And it was an all-ACC Final Four on the women's side except for one team, and that team won. Santa Clara scored with 6 minutes to go and then knocked off Florida State in penalty kicks. The Seminoles hit the post on their first two penalty kick attempts, and Santa Clara went 4-for-4. Then really the amazing story on the men's side. With all these tradition-rich programs, Marshall had never won a championship. All they had to do, you know, was knock off the number one seed just to get to the quarterfinals, and they did so against Clemson. Then they beat Georgetown in the quarterfinals. That would be the defending national champion. Then in the finals against a team that's won it 8 times and has been to the College Cup, that's the semifinals, 16 times, Indiana, they scored in overtime. It was quite exciting on ESPN2.
Joseph now again, wanted to cut in on that right foot like he always does. Laid off to Diaz. He'll take a shot, bounces back. Still Diaz! Shot! Digs through! It's hit across! And it's Roberts there again! Roberts does it again! 3 straight games, and this one's the big one! He's given him the national championship for the first time ever!
That's one where, unless you were one of the opponents, you had to cheer for Marshall. They were ranked 10th, but again, they were unseeded, so they didn't get the committee respect, and they ended up showing them they were pretty good. Jameel Roberts, you just heard, got the winning goal, and that was his third winning goal in a row. So that's how the soccer season ended up all on Monday. Tennis, we'll give you an update here. Again, we've said that the USF men's team has played a lot of teams that are still going. The quarterfinals are set after Monday's action over in Orlando, or Lake Nona, really. The Florida Gators, that's the team that knocked out the Bulls in the second round. Well, they beat Illinois, which was 23-2, 4-0. So it makes you really impressed with how the Bulls were able to take the doubles point from the Gators because Illinois couldn't do it. And Florida will move on. The quarterfinals are set. It was set up possibly for as many as 6 teams in the final 8 from the SEC because you had 7 playing and 2 were playing each other. So it'll only, quote-unquote, be 4, and the way it sets up is pretty interesting because the 4 SEC teams are all matched up against each other. It'll be the Gators, the number 1 seed against Texas A&M, which swept Mississippi State. That's the team that knocked out UCF, so that even looks like a worse loss for UCF now. Also on that side of the bracket, the 4th-ranked and defending champion Texas Longhorns, that's the team that the Bulls played earlier this year, just beating one of those SEC teams, South Carolina. So it'll be Texas against, well, ironically, the other USC Southern Cal. Then you've got Baylor, the number 2 seed, against the 7th seed TCU, and Tennessee, which is 3rd against Georgia. So you've got guaranteed 2 of the final 4 in men's tennis from the SEC. And the quote of the year, and this is a guy that actually And again, this kind of connects to the Bulls. In fact, it really does connect to the Bulls because TCU's head coach is great friends and former college teammates with our head coach, Ashley Fisher, who played at TCU. And David Rotidi, who if you go to our Unlimited Unloaded page, it's worth checking out. During the offseason, Ashley Fisher did a lot of these interview shows called Shooting the Bull, and they're still up on our SoundCloud page. David Rotidi, that's spelled R-O-D-I-T-I, was hilarious and great, probably the best program. And he had the best quote. If you missed this Monday after they beat Ohio State, you may not remember the whole history with TCU and Ohio State. In the first college football playoff, when TCU entered the last weekend as the number 3 ranked team, they win by 52 points against Iowa State, and they don't make the Final Four because, you know, that can happen to some teams that aren't Power 5 schools. And the Ohio State Buckeyes, who ended up winning the championship, AD at the time said, well, TCU just played Little Sisters of the Poor. Well, David Rotidi, after TCU last night beat Ohio State in tennis, says this was a tremendous team effort by the Little Sisters of the Poor today. Definitely the best quote I've seen in a while. On the women's side, more ACC-centric. Yes, it'll be number 1 North Carolina against Duke. That might be fun to check out on Wednesday in Lake Nona. Also on that side, it's a California matchup, UCLA Pepperdine. FSU is the number 7 seed playing Texas, and Georgia is against NC State, so you've got 4 ACC teams there. And remember, the Bulls are not done, even though they're not in the men's field anymore, obviously, as a team. After that all wraps up on Saturday, over in Lake Nona, Sunday, individual play begins, and that's a big deal. You got 64 singles teams, 32 double squads, and you will be playing for the crown of being the best in the country, and our own Kuba Wojcik is in the singles draw. They'll actually lay out the draw later on this week, and he, with Rivdik Bulapalli, are in the doubles tournament as well. So not done yet are the Bulls in tennis. So yeah, coming up on Thursday, we've got a doubleheader as the first of 4 games to finish up the regular season, the Bulls against the ECU Pirates. By the way, later on in this segment, we'll give you an update on softball, what to look forward to this weekend, as well as what happened with golf on the first day of the NCAA tournament. But it is going to be very interesting. It's a lot of dynamics involved that we'll get to in a second involving this series against the Pirates. But first, yeah, the Player of the Week honors. And as I said on yesterday's show, based on what he did, you would have thought Carmine Lane was a candidate for Player of the Week. But I guess there wasn't room on the weekly awards for 2 Bulls because Lane wasn't on them. But Roberto Peña, whose numbers, if you compare them to Lane, were very similar, but maybe not as good, still got Player of the Week, so it's hard to have much of a gripe because he was named Player of the Week. It's not like the league didn't notice the Bulls. In fact, there were 4 baseball series, and you had 2 victors and then 2 splits. And normally, the Player of the Week honors, and it stands to reason, is going to go to one of the teams that had a series victory. In this case, just so happens to be the top 2 teams in the conference, East Carolina and Tulane. East Carolina had a dynamite series with Cincinnati. That's a team to keep an eye on next week in Clearwater. We'll talk more about that in a second, but also Tulane, which had a big walk-off win where they tied it on a homer by the kid from Tampa, Bennett Lee, in the bottom of the 9th, and that really got their series victory started against UCF in New Orleans last weekend. Then the Bulls split, of course, with Wichita, and it was also Houston and Memphis, the bottom 2 teams in the conference, splitting with one another. Now, again, there was only 1 game shown on the Wichita State Shockers video side on ESPN+. But if you saw it, you got to see some blasts of home runs. And the guy who was Player of the Week had the big blast against the Wichita ace. Again, this kid was 4th in the country coming in ERA, but the Bulls handled him pretty well.
1-1 to Roberto Peña. That one's hit a ton to left center field, and that ball is gone. Peña with his 2nd extra base hit off the top edge of the scoreboard. It's 5-0 Bulls. A majestic shot by Peña. Home run number 9. So the hit batter extends the inning, and Roberto Peña cashes it in. And that is about as rudely as Jace Kaminska has been treated all season long. Kaminska came into the game having given up 6 earned runs. He's given up 5 in 2 2/3 today. So Roberto Pena, a dangerous hitter up there with now more than half of his hits for extra bases, has a double and a home run here today.
Update, Jace Kaminska is now second in the conference in ERA. Went from a 1-2-3 to a 2-4. He was also 6-0 into the Bulls, handed him to the defeat. In fact, even though Daniel Cantu wasn't on the weekly honors, he certainly had some good pokes up there in Wichita. He hit one to straightaway center that ended Kaminska's day. Check that out.
Call for Creighton Hansen to get loose for Wichita State in the pen if things don't get any better for Jace Kaminska. And swinging on 3-0, he drives one to dead center and gone. Cantu on 3-0, got a pitch he liked, didn't miss it, and it's all Bulls, 7-0 in the fifth. So Cantu and Pena have done the heavy lifting in the middle of the Bulls order, and Jace Kaminska is getting laced, and that may do it for him. Eric Wedge out of the third base dugout, and that will likely be the end for Jace Kaminska, who finally had a rough outing, and that'll do it. So 7 runs home in the first half of the game for the Bulls.
Some encouraging signs, no doubt, of the offense really coming around at the right time, being the conference tournament, which starts next week. We'll get into this week's series, and I told you there'd be math involved, but here's the math when it comes to Roberto Pena. Hit .533 last week, 8-for-15, 5 runs scored, 5 extra base hits, that would be 2 homers, and 3 doubles. He also had 4 RBI. And you heard the play-by-play man for Wichita mention the extra base hits. For the season, he's hitting .266. He's got 45 hits, 10 home runs, 10 doubles, and 3 triples. So yeah, just more than half of his hits are extra base hits. That is pretty phenomenal in that series specifically. 4-for-4 in the game that you just heard, and then he also hit a home run in the third game that the Bulls were victorious in as well. Now, he had competition, if you want to say it that way. And again, definitely not downplaying what Roberto did, but tell me that these numbers aren't similar, and if not even a little bit better, but certainly from Carmine Lane, deserving of some sort of mention by the conference. So again, Pena hit .533, so he had the better batting average with 5 extra base hits, 2 homers. Carmine Lane only hit .474, but he actually had one more hit. He was 9-for-19 with 3 homers, 1 more RBI as well. So again, certainly not upset that Roberto Pena was named Player of the Week in the American Athletic Conference, but questioning somewhat that Lane wasn't on the weekly honor roll. Let's go ahead and tell you who did make it. Houston ace Robert Gasser, and he's tremendous, by the way, their lefty, struck out 10 in 7 innings. An unearned run, didn't walk anybody in their win against Memphis. He was the pitcher of the week. Now, there's only room for 5 players, so you got 8 teams and 7 players get honored. So I could see maybe some tough decisions, basically. 2 from East Carolina on the 5-man honor roll. Freshman lefty C.J. Mayhew, who appeared in 3 games, got a pair of saves in 5 innings of relief, did strike out 7. I don't mind that. I really don't, because that was a tight series, and both the games were dramatic that came down to the end that he had to save. In fact, Cincinnati's win was a walk-off win with 2 in the bottom of the 10th on a poor throw on a chopper at the middle. But yeah, that's a tense situation for a freshman. Connor Norby for East Carolina. He led the league in hits with 10. All right, that's pretty good. 5 runs, hit .526. Houston's Steven Rivas hit .444, scored 3 runs, double, triple, homer, and 5 RBI. And then Memphis, it was Ian Bibiloni hitting .471 with a homer and 6 RBI. So definitely one of those two guys you could have seen Lane getting the position over. And then finally, Colin Burns from Tulane. And of course, Tulane won its series, so you have to have a green wave on there. And he was pretty good, hit .398 with a grand slam and 5 RBI. So nothing against the kids from Houston and Memphis, but that's, I think, the spot that Lane should have occupied. Hey, maybe he'll be all upset this week and take it out on the ECU Pirates, whose ace pitcher, who the Bulls will see on Thursday, there's a lot of history with this kid, Gavin Williams, by the way, is the new ERA leader in the league by a lot now. And again, a doubleheader on Thursday. Here's what's so interesting about this series. It's the Bulls against the number one team in the league. And boy, what's more enjoyable than taking anyone down a peg? We witnessed it with softball last weekend, of course, as the Bulls fell to UCF and still make the NCAA tournament. More on that in just a little bit. But, boy, to be able to take a series from ECU and knock them down to second place and go into the conference tournament with momentum. Well, if the Bulls did that, guess what? They are going to move up from sixth to either fourth or fifth place and probably have to beat a very angry ECU team twice just to get to the championship game. Yeah, I've been saying it all along, and I know it's counter to what we follow as sports fans, and that is saying it's okay to lose every now and then, because my theory, and if you disagree, that's fine, but I'm going to stick with it. I don't want to be on the half of the bracket with ECU. Here's why. To beat them twice, very difficult. Beat them once, certainly possible. If you are in their half of the bracket, you're probably going to have to beat the Pirates twice to get to the championship game. Again, at the American, it's eight teams. The 1, 8, 4, and 5 seeds are on one side, and then it's the 2 versus 7 and 3 versus 6 on the other sides. Both are double elimination. Then the championship game is single elimination. So if you're on the ECU portion of the bracket, you have to beat them twice, most likely, to get to the final. If you're not, first of all, maybe somebody on the other half of the bracket could knock them out. And secondly, if they don't and they make the final, guess what? You just have to play them one time. The final, by the way, scheduled for next Sunday. It would almost behoove the Bulls, if you agree with me, to finish sixth. I mean, if it's really that important, you think, to finish in fourth or fifth as opposed to sixth, like, that's going to make a big difference, then you'll disagree with me. But I'm saying, if the Bulls were, let's say, to lose the series to ECU or even split it, and as long as UCF and Cincinnati both win at least two games in their series, that means the Bulls would be in the sixth spot, then that's probably the way to go. And if you're wondering, UCF is home to Houston, one of the poorer teams in the league, and Cincinnati is home to Tulane, which is very interesting in itself. So, wait, come to think of it, two wins against ECU would mean Tulane has to lose twice. See what I mean? It's going to be kind of interesting. Of course, the Bulls are going to be trying to win every game of the four. Listen, while this is all going on this week, the numbers and the seeds will sort themselves out. But I'm telling you, is a couple of these quote-unquote heartbreaking losses in series finales that prevented the Bulls from being able to win series both against Cincinnati first and then Wichita this last weekend might end up actually helping them in the standings. But then the more you think about it, if the Bulls actually win the series, which would get them out of the sixth spot, it would knock East Carolina out of the one spot, right? Tulane would become the number one seed, so then you're also not on East Carolina's part of the bracket because they're not the one anymore, and you're in that 4-5 spot. Although I will say this, we do have the schedule for the tournament next week. Whoever is in the 4 and the 5 spot, they play each other Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock. So whoever ends up there better get ready, as it's going to be a full day on Tuesday at the conference tournament. And, of course, before we get there, we'll finish up the regular season Thursday through Saturday.